It's the Maximum Fun Drive, and you know, we are really grateful to all of our Maximum Fun members because it's because of you all that we can even keep doing the show during these bananas times. And that's why we're doing a drive right now, because we want to remind you all that you're the reason that we can even keep producing content like this for you to continue learning and laughing and playing, not only here at Minority Corner, but amongst all the different Maximum Fun shows that there are, because Maximum Fun is audience supported, which means that we are free to make the content you enjoy because people like you contribute. So it's super easy to get involved with the Maximum Fun Drive. You can choose an amount that's comfortable for you. A lot of people actually give at the $5 a month or $10 a month, super simple. And some of y'all have upgraded to the $20 and $35 level. Some are even at $100 per month. But what's great is that people find the level that works for them. So a big thank you to you all already. Let's get into the show. And if you want to become a member or need to upgrade your membership, just head to MaximumFun.org/join. Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout.
Hi, my name is Maury Minhas, she, her, relatively recent citizen of the U.S., a San Francisco native living in New York City for almost 12 years, multilingual, multicultural Bangladeshi American. I love all things sciences, stress baking, archery, and a recent video game enthusiast.
Yay, Maury is back and good just in time because she can help me understand why I have so much venom for the music video Say My Name by Destiny's Child. And good thing Detective Momo is here because she's on the case to help us unearth what happened to the other two original ladies of Destiny's Child. Well, it all kind of happened around the time Say My Name and then went over into Survivor. It's a lot to unpack, but you will be ready for your next Destiny's Child Night trivia. So, Nick Cannon sure did step in it with some anti-Semitic remarks. Is he canceled? And also, why is there ever even beef between black folks and Jewish peeps? It makes no sense. Good thing Maury is here, because as a researcher, she can help us understand the hysteria and hypocrisy and the history of gay and bisexual men not being able to donate blood. What's up with that? NASCAR is fucking with my boo, Bubba Wallace, and they better watch it because I'm not having it. And then in the main event, I take a deep dive into McGriff v. Oklahoma. Now, you might remember that is the landmark Supreme Court decision that upheld that a huge chunk of East Oklahoma was still under the jurisdiction of those native tribes. And we look into the history that led up to this moment that dates back all the way to the Trail of Tears. We're going to look into what the argument against it was and what the First Nations people were fighting for, and what does this mean for the future of Native people's rights in America, and not only that area, but across the country. It is a fascinating one to deep dive and uncover, and really explores whose land that we are standing upon. Very excited about today's episode. Oh, we're gonna learn, we're gonna laugh, we're gonna play right here on Minority Corner. Hey, Mo. I was gonna, can I call you Momo? That's my personal
That's
nickname
fine.
For you.
Okay. Yes, Momo is fine.
I don't know how personal we're about to get here, but hey, Momo.
I'm sure very personal. Hi, Baby J.
I knew you were, I was like, man, if I'm calling you Momo, then you're coming for me with Baby J. Got it. Well, and also, too, you just have me thinking about say my name when no one is around you.
I can't believe
say, baby, I love you.
Spiraled into this black hole of just the backstory behind it.
I don't even know how this started. All I know is I'm on a text with Momo, and it just was, I learned so much about Say My Name, more than I ever knew. I don't even remember how that started.
You just texted and saying that something about how that wasn't the first video or that wasn't the right video.
Here it is. I realized I absolutely hated the music video Say My Name.
Okay. That's
I don't like it. Oh, here's what it is. I loved the song Say My Name. I loved it. I had that album, Destiny's Child, The Writings on the Wall. I had that album and I used to listen to Say My Name all the time. And then the music video came out and I was aghast. I was disgusted. I had venom.
Yeah, I know. I remember being like, wait a minute. That's not...
Who are these girls?
Yeah, it's like, that's not Destiny's Child. There's like two people that I recognize and like, that's it.
And there was like, I feel like there was a lot of, so going back in time, the music video premieres like on Total Request Live or something. And it's confusing as fuck because it's like, there's two recognizable faces from Destiny's Child and then there's some two other girls. And this is back before like social media and there's like no explanation as to like who other girls are. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but I dare to say there are also other random girls in it too. Like other girls who weren't even in the group. And they were doing these weird pose dances on like the one and the three beat. So it wasn't like on, usually you hit things on the two and the four, just to dance or talk.
I just remember it being so awkward.
Hitting it on the off beat. And so you're having them hit these like dramatic poses. And one of them, who we would later find out to know is Michelle, was always just kind of like a half account like off or something with her like,
that's like her life poses. That's her life story. Michelle, half account late.
Half account off. And then the thing that kills me the most is like there's like this breakdown part in the song where they're like, ooh yeah 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 yeah, ooh yeah 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 yeah. And you're like, ooh, they're about to dance because they got into like a garage and there's like 10 million backup dancers behind them. And they literally just do this sort of like basketball motion where they're just kind of like swiveling around in like a circle. Like they bend down, they come up, and then they reverse direction.
Oh my God. And then they just
sort of mime dribbling basketballs. And I just was like, I don't know what the fuck this is. And then it took me a long time to recover for liking Destiny's Child. I pretty much was like done with them until they did Lose My Breath, where Beyonce let the other two girls sing. So that was my journey. But you then took that and you went in deep to the name Say My Name.
Well, because I wanted to know what happened to the other two girls, LaToya and Latavia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it turns out Beyonce's Papa Beyonce, Beyonce's dad, was shady as hell. And like something about how the two girls complained that they don't have a representation. So like no one's speaking out on their behalf because, you know, Beyonce's dad is managing everything.
Right. And Daddy Knowles is like pushing Beyonce to the front. Like she's going to sing all the lead parts. Yeah.
And so they voiced that. And that like just like triggered this whole like Papa Beyonce suddenly was like cutting them out of things, cutting them off of like payments.
Oh my God, shady.
Yeah. And then
isn't that how they found out that they also weren't in the group when the music video premiered?
That's the worst part, I think, is that the two girls found out that they were no longer in the group because they happened to see this video.
Shady.
It's so shady.
Fucking shady. Yeah. And then wasn't there something else that came out when they did the song Survivor, when the song Survivor came out?
Oh, yeah. Supposedly the girls were like, the song is talking about us, how they can survive without us.
And blatantly, like I feel like the song tries to play like tongue in cheek that like, oh, it's just about surviving a bad relationship. There's literally a point when they're like, I'm gonna sell more songs than you.
Yeah,
I'm
basically
at the top of the charts.
That is
not about some scorned lover. That is clearly about LaToya Latavia, who you kicked out of the group and then made all these songs about.
Yeah, it's just shady as hell. And you know, like, I love Beyonce, but I feel like she could have, you know, stopped her dad from doing these kind of shady shit.
Well, listen, she was always in the front, so she probably never even knew who was standing behind her anyways, so it made no difference to her.
Oh my God.
You can change the girls in and out. She doesn't know. Just keep your harmonies together and let's go. Like, oh, who was behind me? Oh, is it Farrah? Okay, all right, whatever. Oh, Farrah's in prison now and she's not here.
Farrah.
Farrah was the one. There's a great YouTube clip where you can see her very last moment. It was like on a CW show. Like, people forget, like, Beyonce wasn't always Beyonce. Like, she, it took her a long time to get to be like Queen B. Like, she was in that Carmen hip opera, nobody cared. She was in Austin Powers Gold Member. She was in Pink Panther. Like, nobody cared. She made a lot of terrible, like, songs. Like, Check Up On It, Come Fight Me. The song is garbage.
I hate Check Up On It so much.
It's so cheesy. There's another one with like big horns in the background. It took her a while to find her voice in her stride. But anyways, but wasn't there also a point where the girls were going to try to do their own solo act, but they got like Daddy Knowles like blacklisted them from the industry? Or like there was something where they weren't allowed to like record their own songs.
Yeah, basically. It sounded like, blacklisting, that's the right word. Because, like, all these people who were supposed to be involved with their projects kind of, like, pulled out or, like, put it on hold. And it never really materialized for them. And it's just so sad. I think that one of them is, like, active in, like,
LaToya.
Stage. She's doing, like, musicals. And another one, I think she's on, like, one of those reality shows.
Well, not but Farrah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just ruined. They got ruined.
Poor girls. I mean, don't go up against the House of Knowles. They're kind of like, let's be honest, they're kind of the Lannisters of the music industry.
I mean, the fact that like Papa Beyonce did what he did and then Mama Beyonce was the one who Mama Knowles got all those like cheesy outfits for them. Well,
those outfits
were
terrible. And eventually, like, Beyonce was just like, Mama, stop making these outfits. Here's some money and go marry Bianca Lawson's dad. Because I think Daddy Knowles, he was acting a fool and he needed to be put out to pasture. Well, I only know so much about this. Like, I know that I'm just literally regurgitating all of the texts that I remember that you sent me. So
that's it's funny because I don't remember all the details.
It stuck with me. I thank you for that little dark hole that you went in for us.
It was like a flurry of information that I was like dealing with, and then I just had to give it to you. But then after that, I had
a Maury alert set up for Say My Name. Like anytime new information was uncovered about the song, it was literally kind of around the world of that song, Say My Name. So. Well, we will say your names, LaToya Latavia. We will say your names.
Yep, it's true.
Speaking of someone's name that people have been saying a lot lately, Nick Cannon of Wild 'N Out. Might have been Wild 'N Out a little bit too much.
Oh no, what did he do? Because I do not know about this.
So he has this podcast, and I think he just got like a bunch of like degrees or something. He graduated something, I don't know. But he has this show called Cannon's Class, and recently he's essentially has just been fired from Viacom CBS for anti-Semitic comments on his podcast. So he essentially what he said, he went down a rabbit hole. Like there's good rabbit holes and there's like not good rabbit holes, right?
mine was a good one.
Anytime you go down a rabbit hole that doesn't like involve like, you know, tarnishing or promoting hate speech down another group, like a group of people, like maybe it's, I wouldn't even say yours is hate speech against a girl group because it's Destiny's Child, but it's like, you know, we're just side eyeing part of the members of Destiny's Child and mainly the manager, Papa Knowles. But he went down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories that included one involving the Rothschild family, who established banking and finance houses throughout Europe during the 1700s. He also discussed his admiration of the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, which, like, I'm scared to say this on the air, but, like, I'm going to be very choice with my words because I'm a little bit frightened of the Nation of Islam. Look what they did to Malcolm X. But I'm not a fan of Louis Farrakhan. I will just say this. I just watched the movie Ali starring Will Smith. Very good. I highly recommend it. Ali came out when I was like 16 and I would Yeah. No interest in watching a boxing movie.
Well, no interest in any serious movie, really.
No, like, I need explosions. Like, I never watched anything serious. And Ninja Turtles. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah,
not
basically.
Interested. But now as an adult, highly recommend the movie Ali because it really does go into, I didn't realize how involved in just sort of like the civil rights he was sort of caught up into, you know, because he is Muslim and just he had a relationship with Malcolm X. And then Louis Farrakhan had a falling out with Malcolm X, putting it mildly, but, you know, was, I think, kind of jealous of Malcolm X and had kind of splintered the relationship between Muhammad Ali. And then also when Muhammad Ali, he had gotten drafted and was like, he gives a really great speech of like, essentially like, you know, why am I going over there to kill the Viet Cong? They've not done anything to me. They've never called me, you know, a nigger, you know, here in my own country. And so again, you know, black people were dying at a disproportionate rate over there in Vietnam, fighting to liberate some other country when, quote unquote, when we're not even having liberation here. So,
yeah.
Louis Farrakhan, and don't get me talking about Louis Farrakhan because I will go off.
I don't think I know enough about him. So I'm kind of like, just tell me anything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Highly recommend. I'm just going on so many recommendation tangents. There is a documentary of, I think it's called Who Killed Malcolm X. It was on Epics originally, but it's now on Netflix. Highly recommend. Very faulty and sad just what ended up happening and didn't get a lot of answers. And some of the wrong people ended up going to jail and some people who were involved did not. So very fascinating journey and watch. But anyways, Nick Cannon spouting off all this, you know, nonsense. And he had, he also had, let's see, Professor Griff, a former member of the rap group Public Enemy, who in 1989 was removed from the group after making anti-Semitic comments. So it's just getting these two people together talking about Jewish people. It's just nothing good's going to come of it. So Nick Cannon, obviously, so he lost his job at Wild 'N Out. And yeah, so he lost his job over these comments. Now, I think the thing that I kind of want to just bring to light is he has since made a few different apologies. And I know sometimes we're like, uh-oh, apologies. But he's actually made some really good, I would say, apologies. So he went on an apology tour as one I think should do when they're doing, you know, nonsense like this. I want to assure my Jewish friends, new and old, that this is only the beginning of my education. I am committed to deeper connections, more profound learning, and strengthening the bond between our two cultures today, every day, and going forward. I want to express my gratitude to the rabbis, community leaders, and institutions who reached out to help me to enlighten instead of chastising me. And while the Jewish experience encompasses more than 5,000 years and there's so much more I have yet to learn, I have had at least a minor history lesson over the past few days. And to say this is eye-opening would be a vast understatement. And so that was kind of the gist of his apology. Goes into more details.
Yeah. Well, that's very mature of him. I mean, I hope that it was from him and not like his publicist, but yeah.
It sounds like very sort of Nick Cannon-y, and it is on his like Twitter account that he did say that. But yeah, that there was his apology thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad it sounds like it's sincere and, you know, hopefully, I mean, it's too late now with like, you know, getting fired from his jobs and stuff. But hopefully this is a learning lesson and he will be better next time. And one thing I think celebrities and anyone in public needs to understand is that just do not bring up any conspiracy theory.
Oh, it's that's true.
It's just all bad, especially if it has to do with something like this, like anti-Semitism. Yeah. Like, come on. You cannot.
Yeah, the only sort of conspiracy theories I like to dance around with are maybe like the ones that are like hashtag free Britney, you know, maybe that one that she needs to be freed and she's stuck in her conservatorship. Like that's one. And also like if you look at her Instagram, you're like, Britney, what's going on? Like blink twice if you need help. Like it doesn't look good over there in Britney land. But like that's also not help. That's like there's not a history of like, you know, millions of Britneys having been either enslaved or murdered, any genocide around that, right? Then that'd be different of, okay, let's calm it down. And I think, too, like, I always give space for people to step in it and grow and learn. You know, like I actually, to be honest, wasn't really a fan of Nick Cannon. I was always just kind of like indifferent. Like I didn't really give two shits. Like he wasn't, I didn't care. I didn't really watch Wild 'N Out. Yeah. Like I didn't really care. But I think what I did really appreciate is the growth and learn. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, this is just a, you know, miseducation. It's like, well, the dude has like several degrees. So, and he talks about it with great eloquence. So I don't necessarily think it's that, but, I'm all for people stepping in it and then growing and learning from that. Like when Kevin Hart, you know, was brought to light about his homophobic comments in the past, and instead of like meeting the dialogue and the conversation, he just dropped out of the Oscars completely, right? And so at least with Nick Cannon doing this, it's allowing us to have a very honest look and conversation. And I think what's so frustrating about this is, well, one, unfortunately, anti-Semitism is on the rise. Like, I don't know why. Like,
crazy. Yeah.
I thought we did this already. Like, I don't understand. So, and then the frustrating part about it is for me is with Black folks who, anybody within the Black community who, you know, punches towards another community. It's like, we understand struggles. So I don't understand why anybody in the Black community would try to punch towards another you know, community, especially the Jewish community, who when you look at back in the civil rights movement, were there on the front lines, arm in arm, because it's another community that understands genocide and, and struggle. So that, you know, and not only Nick Cannon, but also Ice Cube has been saying some stuff. Like there's just this weird anti-Semitism that's happening amongst some Black people with voices in the community. And I think that's dangerous and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but I do agree with you about giving people the chance to better themselves and, you know, grow from it. Because I think people like to see, or at least I like to see people grow from it instead of just canceling them and writing them off and then, like, that's that, you know. But, like, I think that you bringing up Kevin Hart reminded me that, like, I feel like he didn't learn his lesson.
No,
and and that, to me, is a lot more concerning than someone who does something wrong, takes responsibility, and then learns and moves like forward with that knowledge.
This actually made me like Nick Cannon more. I've just like, I love, I maybe just cause I'm a, I love growth. I love human beings growing. And it made me sort of pull for that. I will say what's so frustrating about, this is one thing about like what it's like to be a Black person in America, is that when the thing that my first thought when this happened with Nick Cannon, it's when you're part of a marginalized community, when anybody in your community does something, you feel like it reflects upon you, right? Yeah. Like it's such like a family thing, right? Yeah. Like if, so it's cause his success is my success, or his failure, it's like, oh, look at the Black people. Oh, they racist too. And you know, I don't think that white people have that same feeling. Like when Mel Gibson is going on his rant, or when Harvey Weinstein did what he did, I don't think any white person was like, oh, Harvey, you're making us look bad.
Yeah, no, I think that is a thing for, that's a very minority specific problem. I think every time, you know, I mean, like, I'm not a practicing Muslim, but, you know, culturally I am. And, but if something happens somewhere in the world and it's in the news, like you feel like, God damn it, does it have to be like, you know, or like if it's someone with my background, the first thing is like, why do you have to be Bengali? Like, why?
Like, you're like, you know? They're like, oh, like, you know, brown person did a terrorist attack. You're like, please don't be Bengali. Please don't be Bengali. You know,
exactly. Just open brain. Yeah. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened. So Nick, don't do that for the community, especially because like, honestly, we have the world's ear right now, as we should, with a lot of the progress and movements that are happening. And then when he does this, it shuts people off to the conversation and the work that we're doing. And just historically, and just like, it's bad, like anti-Semitism, don't do it, especially for Black folks. And also too, it's like, I do not believe that this is the vast thinking of, I don't know a single Black person in my life and has anti-Semitic ideas or views or anything like that. So it's such a small minority of people who are just not in the right way of thinking. And we need to cut that shit out.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, we like to say like, well, I don't want to be the, what is it called? The representation of my people. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I should never be treated as a representation of this whole group of people, right? But at the mm-hmm. same time, we do have these feelings when someone from our background does something, we are like, God damn it. Like,
shut up, yeah. Nick Cannon. Just shut up and get people doing crazy rhymes. Like,
I know, right? Ooh,
just go back to doing your mama jokes, Nick Cannon, and raising your Mariah Carey babies. Like, oh, this is not what we need.
Oh, that's right. They were together. I forgot. That's such an odd couple, too.
And I think that's, too, why I kind of always kind of, like, side-eyed Nick Cannon, because I just always thought, like, I mean, who am I to judge? But that was just such an interesting relationship that
it's
I just
like,
never got.
How did that happen?
Never understood Mimi and Nick Cannon. Yeah. And then when they weren't together anymore, my only way to possibly like him was through Mariah Carey. And then when they weren't together anymore, I was like, well, no, I really don't give a fuck. And then this happened and I was like, well, fuck like you. And then he's like, I'm sorry. And a genuine apology. Like, this is how you apologize. Yeah. It wasn't sorry if you were offended. Sorry if you don't understand. Or I have Jewish friends. Like,
oh God. Blah, 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 blah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that.
Yeah.
This is good. Good job, Nick. Keep it up. Somebody else I would love an apology from is everybody who went to that recent NASCAR race and booed my boyfriend, or soon-to-be boyfriend, or soon-to-be husband, or soulmate, Bubba Wallace, when, first of all, they booed him when he walked out.
Wait, then so, okay, they, go on.
And then his car crashed around, like, the lap 17 or something, and they applauded.
Wait, what? Is this before or after, like, they did this whole, like, in support of...
Oh, this is recently. This happened... I just had this on my Facebook feed, like, this past weekend.
Because wasn't it, like, around the time of all the protests and stuff, you know, they did the, like, we're in solidarity thing and, like, walked with him on the track.
Right,
and
NASCAR
that,
took
right?
away... Like, Bubba Wallace came out and was like, why is the Confederate flag here? And NASCAR in solidarity was not going to wave the Confederate flag. Which, again, like, I don't understand
like,
what the Confederate flag has to do with
do
racing cars
star?
Around a track.
Like, do you want a gold star for taking down a hate? Like, basically, like,
that
a,
flag should
a
have been gone.
Hate?
Again, the flag of traitors. It's a flag of traitors.
Losers.
A flag of losing traitors, which, like, that doesn't... Who wants to wear that? Like, who wants to have that flying around? So, yeah. So they did do that, and then there was, like, the case of the noose that was potentially found in the garage, but he had never seen it, and apparently the FBI looked into it for, like, a minute and was like, oh, that had been there. I don't know. So that whole entire case was really faulty.
Yeah, their
but anyways,
thing was, like, that's been there for a long time, and it's like, well, that doesn't make it any better.
It doesn't make it any better. That why was that noose up there at all, or why was there? It just shouldn't have been there. It's faulty. So, yeah, this happened just this past, I guess, weekend on July. This was reported on July 17th. Around his 17th, around his 17th lap, he crashed. Yeah, and they applauded. So just when I was literally about to be like, "Ooh, maybe I'll buy like a NASCAR jersey, hat, jacket." I don't know what do you wear to like support your favorite NASCAR driver?
I don't know something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
know,
well, not
with
anymore.
Confederate flag on it, maybe. I don't know.
Well, no. Okay, that's in the wrong direction. No. Well, now I'm not supporting anything, but just a big fuck you to NASCAR, and it's
yeah. No,
participants.
I mean, ugh. Yeah. I mean, like, is it? I wonder if it's the problem of the organization or the fans. But the organization should
well,
be able
the
to
fans.
Do something about the fans. Like you can put restrictions and guidelines and rules, being like this is
like,
you know
don't
like kind
boo
of the
in
code,
someone-
yeah, or like a code of conduct, right? Like don't come in here with your Confederate flag, or don't boo someone when they crash. You know, like
yeah. So and I don't listen. I love that you think that. Well, I don't want to. Paint with a broad brush, but and I don't know these NASCAR people, but like they are the Keke Palmer to they are the Dick Cheney to my Keke Palmer. I don't know them. Like they could be walking down the street and I wouldn't, you know who they were. But I don't think that they're probably gonna agree to some community agreements. Like you're getting a little
That's
too hippie yaya for me.
I know. I was just thinking like Because I was thinking, like, how do other sports kind of control that stuff? Like, they probably have restrictions.
Sports fans in general can just be assholes. Like, I think that should happen. People boo, all kinds of things. It's our new gladiator sort of arena or whatnot. I just think that, like, when you're booing the only black person who crashes his car, who was just standing up for just like, hey, let's not have the Confederate flag here, or just trying to promote, you know, it all started because he was wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. Like, he's not gonna ignore his blackness, and why not? That's his freedom. It's his freedom of speech. Like, why are you booing someone's freedom of speech? I don't get it.
Oh, and I guess they're... I mean, like, if you dare to boo their freedom of speech, I mean, they cause so much ruckus, right?
Well, Tucker Carlson would tell us. Yeah, well, Tucker Carlson would tell us how we're, you know, the scourge of the earth. And because it's a day that ends in Y, fuck you, Tucker Carlson. Today is the fuck you episode.
Yeah,
fuck you to
basically.
NASCAR. Fuck you to Tucker Carlson. Fuck you to Papa Knowles.
Papa Knowles. Yeah.
I got plenty. You know what? A lot of people are like, I don't have any fucks to give. Oh, I have plenty of fucks to dish out.
Yeah,
I got fucks for everybody.
Yeah, so many.
Okay, so some of you already know that the job market, it's a mess right now. Some of you have been looking for a new opportunity, or you're looking to make yourself a better candidate because you're like, you know what? Now's my chance. I deserve it. I'm fabulous. It's time for my promotion. Or you just want to build up your skills to take your life to the next level. And you're like, but I don't know how. I think I got something that's going to work for you. It's the University of Toronto Rotman School of Management. We've been talking about this for a few weeks now, and you know that it is one of the best schools in Canada and the world. I mean, anything that has the Canada stamp of approval, I'm already interested. And so in just 3 weeks, you're going to learn how to work collaboratively across divisions, develop your business acumen, and network with a global group of early to mid-career professionals just like you. So if you live in the US, don't forget that them prices be in those Canadian dollars, so it's a little bit different. You just want to make sure that the exchange rate is going to work in your favor before you sign up, because the US dollar price, it's going to be lower, which kind of makes you feel like you're getting it on sale. So if you're ready to take your skills and your career to the next level, you're gonna wanna visit uoft.me/maxfun. Once again, that's uoft.me/maxfun to learn more and apply. Classes start August 10th, 2020. That is right around the corner. And at least someone's gonna be going back to school. So start your application today to save your seat. Remember, that is uoft.me/maxfun. Rotman. Here's where it changes. Okay. Oh, speaking of things that are like, fuck you, this really is. I got my finger on the fuck you button. I want to talk to you because I think that you kind of can maybe help me understand about where this is. So I want to talk about gay and bisexual men being able to give blood. And so we're in a crisis right now with, you know, the pandemic. And I think that my brother works at a blood drive, and they're always in needing of blood and blood donations. Mm-hmm. And there has been a restriction on gay and bisexual men since the 1980s that the FDA implemented. That back in 1983, it was pretty much a lifetime ban on blood donations from all men who had sex with men after 1977. So I guess if you're like fucking older, like fucking older men who've only also had sex with people like since 19, what? So if I'm fucking someone who's only fucked someone from people from 1970, I'm good to go. Is that what the math is?
I think it's about like anyone before 1977. Maybe it has to do with when the organization was formed, like Red Cross or something, or who knows what. But like the whole ban started in Reagan era.
That man. Yeah, which anytime he was like, let's wave a flag for Reagan, I'm like, go fuck you.
For who eight, is talk waving about a man, flag for Reagan?
Oh, there. Oh, let me, Meghan McCain.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
There are people, about probably like half the fucking country, like, ignored that this thing was happening to people for like about eight years, that was a pandemic that was happening, very similar to, he was, you know, the show, he was just a showman. President Reagan was just a showman, but at least in some regards had some respect for governance and law, more so than Agent Orange does.
Yeah. But I mean, he's still actor. Like, he came from anything with any background that relevant.
Well, I mean, he was governor of California, but
for like 2000. So was Arnold. Come on.
Hey, listen, I plan on running for office one day. I don't want people to just be like, oh, he's just an actor. He's just a podcaster. He's just a Britney fan. Gotta start somewhere.
No, but I think you have a lot more on your in your background about things that you speak about. But
fair. Part of Reagan's thing was, though, similar to Agent Orange, is he had his own radio show. He had his fireside chats. And so that's how he became so popular, because he was sort of like a more charismatic version of Rush Limbaugh, who ended up running for governor and president. Like, he had this sort of, you know, you talk about the silent majority, that, you know, like, we're the voice that's not being heard. And he also helped to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment. So there's then in 2015, there were new guidelines. So if you had abstained for sex for 12 months, you were good to go. So I guess if you were like having like a year where you're like, I'm finding myself.
I'm gonna just, you know,
kind of a nun year.
Yeah, nun.
Yeah, which I get it. So like, listen, but that's a very small fraction of human beings or gay men. And not to say that, like, you know, I mean, human beings have sex within a year. And so that's a hard hurdle to be able to jump into.
I mean, I also don't think, like, so a year, I mean, the whole reason that they give is that male who had sex with other male are engaging in higher frequency of, like, high risk activities.
There's a potential for a higher risk of contracting HIV and having that in their blood.
Well,
potential. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so it's like, so for high risk sexual behavior. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure straight people are not waiting 1 year before they donate.
Yes,
blood.
Totally. And in fact, there was I don't know if you saw the statistic last year, about 24% of new HIV cases were heterosexual. And they don't have any hoops, like, to be able to sort of have to jump through. And although, like, in April 2nd, the period has now gone from 12 months to 3 months, which has been, like, you know, for some people, like, listen, I guess I could give blood then. Can I? Oh, yeah, no, I can't. I just made the cutoff. So, listen, makes me feel less sexy than a pandemic. Like, I'm not interested. Just, take my blood.
But, you know, this whole thing, they had to change these guidelines because in March of this year, we had 86,000 less donation across the whole country.
Yeah.
So, like, it took a pandemic for them to be like, well, maybe we should change this rule that is based on prejudice and not based on fact. Mm. And that, to me, is like, I mean, yes, I think it's a step forward. But also, why is it still the rule that, you know, and for this, the reason that you talked about how there are more straight people with HIV now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the cases that are being reported.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think that we can do better. And another thing to add is all blood product is tested for HIV.
Yeah.
It's tested for Hep C. It's tested for other pathogens. So, like, this thing about, like, quote-unquote cleanliness of the blood and where it's coming from, who it's coming from, is kind of a moot point. If you're going to do all that to check the product, then why does it matter?
Yeah. It's sort of like, it's letting that hysteria that's left over from what happened in the 80s with HIV, and it's still here it is 30 years later, still hanging about. And it's also really disconcerting because it's like, what about the gay and bisexual men who've been in a monogamous relationship for, you know, as opposed to, like, I can be in a monogamous relationship And meanwhile, like, you know, Kyle or, you know,
Chad
on the street. It's so funny because I know two Kyles and Chads, and they're both just like, not that. Like, they're just two black educated men that, like,
all right, but so you know what? How about,
it's hard to find a name. Listen, it's fine. Kyle, Chad. It's
we just can like go not with Karen too.
Exactly. I have an aunt Karen, but listen, you take it with strides. God. We get it. Yeah. Not all Karens, but whatever. It strikes the point, right? Like, yeah. Or you could say Stacey, but it's like, okay, well, I also know Stacey Abrams or the CEO of my company. She's a black woman. She's amazing. But anyways, James and the Giant Peach, listen, we've all got things. We've all got things. But anyways, Kyle, who's like, you know, having sex like with five different women every day, he could give blood. But me in my fictitious monogamous relationship that does not exist yet, speak it into existence, I could not.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, I was saying that it's a step forward. I'm not going to, you know, minimize that. I think that we did make a step forward, but we can do better.
Although on the same page, this does mean that like then I have to like donate blood and like
you don't have to.
I don't want to, but now I don't have the excuse. But then I'm just being a dick because then I'm just like, hey, do you want to donate blood? No. But now it's like, oops, sorry, I can't. They won't let me. Like homophobia is systemic. But once that, it's sort of just like before my reason for not being married was like they won't let me. It's illegal. Mm-hmm. And now the reason is just like my dating life is sad. So you know. I don't know. Sometimes we need to pump the brakes on some of these equality rules.
No, you don't mean that. You do not mean that.
Listen, when gay marriage got passed, like four of my gay best friends all got engaged in the same year. So that used to be like a straight person's problem having to deal with that, going to all these weddings and being like, why am I not getting married? Like my life just became like a Lifetime original movie or something, like, or a romantic comedy.
Welcome to our world.
I don't, says the married lady.
That's true.
This is Delaney from Pittsfield, New Hampshire. I'm the Max Fun member because the podcasts and shows here have made it easy to smile when smiles felt impossible, and also sometimes easy to sleep when sleep felt impossible. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, that
was so sweet.
Isn't that sweet?
That's sweet.
Oh, it's so great. I love it. I love hearing from just the listeners as well. And speaking of, we also got a tweet of someone who has already jumped into the fun of becoming a Max Fun member this go around for the Maximum Fun Drive.
Yeah. So the tweet is from Daria Dorothea. She says, I love knowing that I'm able to support amazing people and content like you guys. It's one of the few things in my life that I feel really makes a difference to the world at large. That's also very, very sweet.
Yeah. Minority Corner is, here it is. It's providing, you know, news and information to people or shit that they didn't know, some laughs and some giggles when it's hard to do sometimes right now.
Yeah.
Or to have a sense of sanity or helping to provide people some empowerment. And I would say if that sounds like you, that's what Minority Corner has been for you in these times, then I would encourage you to join and become a member at Maximum Fun. And I would say do it now, right? We talk about so much on this show, vote with your dollars. This is literally a way to vote with your dollars.
Exactly. And you can, you know, there are a few ways to do it.
Ooh,
and
how can they do it? They can become a member? How?
Exactly. So there's a few ways. You can start with $5 a month, and that will give you all the bonus content. It's like when you have a video game and you get your DLC.
Oh my God, it's exactly like that. Remember like on DVDs you used to get like a bonus sort of like extra because you pay for the DVD and like it would be, it's one thing that I miss with like Netflix is not getting, you know,
it's the extra footage. Yeah,
I want to know how do they make that? And we've got some dope, like I know a lot of the other shows have some great bonus content, but we've got something that's really dope. And we're going to be doing a Minority Corner town hall on race. And it's going to be featuring myself. We have Travel from Fanti, Aneke, some of our other past co-hosts like Jennifer Covington, Bruce, Shantira Jackson, who writer-comedian. It's going to be an amazing conversation, and that's going to be our bonus content for this year.
Yeah,
so,
and it's only going to cost you $5.
Only going to cost you $5, and you're going to be supporting not only this show, but other shows that you probably listen to.
Exactly. I mean, $5 a month is nothing when you think about all the stupid things you spend money on.
It's less than your Netflix or Disney. There's not a single other streaming service that you can get for $5 a month.
Yeah. So that's how you can start, and then you can go up a tier, do $10 a month, where you'll get a Max Fun membership card, a cool pin, a flare, and also, of course, get the bonus stuff.
Well, I mean, that's what we came here for. Yeah. And in this year's pin that was designed, it is our motto that because together we're the majority, which... like to plug that that tagline came from the one and only Dolores Huerta. And a lot of people have just been loving that tagline because it really is true that we really are united together. We are the majority.
Yeah. Then you can do a $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And with that, you will get a bunch of cool things. You will get a Max Fun game pack featuring custom dice set and custom deck of playing cards. All with unique Max Fun designs. And
it's super cute. I have a deck. I'm holding it in my hands right now. I'm working on a magic trick. Okay. I would tell you, how do you do a magic trick through Zoom? I'm like, Maury, pick a card.
Oh my God.
Can't work.
I'm working on it. I think you need to ask the magicians of the world, how are you holding up during this COVID-19 pandemic?
We need to bring on some magicians onto the show and ask them how they holding up.
And you can, you can pick your tier. You can pick your tier of DLC and yes. Get your bonus content.
What's your
content.
Level of bonus content? Oh, I love that. Oh.
Just go visit MaximumFun.org/join. And become a member.
Oh, here's a really cool thing. So if you want to support, some of you are already members and you're like, listen, I can't jump to the next level, but I want to support in some way. I want to get involved in some way. You can do a little cool thing called boosting your membership. And that's if you're going in between some of the levels. So you won't qualify for any of the gifts, but you will still be contributing in some way that was a little bit more than last year for yourself. And it'll go a long way. So maybe you're at the $10 level and you're like finding like $1.50 in your couch every month. And you've been like, what am I going to do with this $1.50? You can just upgrade your membership from $10 to $11.50. And you've got, you're going to be helping. You're going to be doing something great with that $1.50 that's just been in your couch. But also, what's with your magical couch?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. What else are you finding in there? Like, I don't know. Cheetos? Polly Shore, is he there? That's where he's been. Gilbert Godfrey, you're finding these random comedians in your couch. I have more questions, but we don't have time. So I just would like to, really thank the listeners at this point, who, especially those who work in healthcare and retail and other essential jobs out there, teachers who are trying to, get it all together, who've probably been working throughout the summer. Those of you who've just been engaging in protests, those who have been just struggling in any other way. Sometimes it's hard to even get out of the bed every day, and you're listening to this podcast right now. And we just want to thank you we're grateful for the work that you do. And we hope that this show has been and will continue to be a place of solace and empowerment, and that we're in some way supporting the work that you do. And then it's like you're supporting us. So it's just like a big support circle. Minority Corner, support circle. That should be the tagline for Maximum Fun Drive. Yeah. Support circle. Okay, so I wanted to get into something that something happened recently that was a huge, huge win for Native Americans In the Supreme Court, there was a ruling that happened recently, and I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the history behind this ruling. What does it mean? What were they fighting for and against, and how this all happened? Before I jump into this, I do want to just acknowledge there's a really great podcast called This Land. And the host of the This Land podcast is hosted by Rebecca Nagel, who I believe is from the Cherokee Nation. And she talks about, like, a year ago, she did this investigation into what the Supreme Court case was. Ultimately, the Supreme Court ended up not ruling by the end of last year and kicked the can down the line to the ruling that just happened recently. And we'll talk about a little bit why that was. So we're going to dive into this recent Supreme Court ruling, because also the Supreme Court has been, like, dealing, like, you've been, that gavel has been banging left and right. There's so many cases they've been dealing because they're getting up towards the end of their session. Mm-hmm. And so this one kind of got buried because this was around the time when it was revealed that Agent Orange passed you. He's not above the law, contrary to popular, not popular belief, but like cultish belief. I think he essentially, like, the case against his, he has to release, you know, his tax records, or he's not above the law. So, okay, so before I also get into this, I just want to let y'all know that a lot of the research and writing that I had found, they do use, and even in the Supreme Court's ruling, I believe, like, you will hear me say the word, like, Indian, but that's because that is some of the language that has been used in some of these laws that were written in the past. So please don't clutch your pearls. Just understand I am reading from different documents and legal statutes that refer to Native Americans, Indigenous, or First Nations folks as Indians. So don't be alarmed. Get your hand off the cancel button. Get it off the cancel button. Don't you cancel me. Don't you cancel me.
You can go on an apology tour.
Yeah, let me get Nick Cannon. I'll call him up and be like, how do I do my apologies? So the Native Americans and First Nations people have been consistently going up against the Supreme Court and court cases, too, which is just sad when you just think about this. Just really just fighting for their rights and existence in life. For example, from 2006 to 2017, they lost 9 out of 11 cases in the Supreme Court. And what we're really looking for when you get to a Supreme Court ruling is we're looking for to establish some sort of precedent, because then other cases can then point to, well, in this case, and then they can just be like, oh, okay, all right. So that's what they're really fighting for. And I thought also by me diving into this, I feel like I understood more so what the Supreme Court, what they do. So also the Cherokee Nation versus Georgia in 1831, there was Cheryl versus Oneida of New York in 2005, and Baby Girl versus Adopted Couple in 2013. That sounds like an episode of the People's Court, like Baby Girl versus Adopted Couple. And in that case was about adoption. There was a really interesting case, so I encourage you to dive even deeper into Baby Girl versus Adopted Couple, because essentially, anyways, I'm not worried. Put a pin in it. You can look into it some more. But the main one I want to talk about, which was the Supreme Court ruling, was McGriff v. Oklahoma. So the court was looking into, does the U.S. need to honor its past obligations? And then you're thinking, you know, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Honor your obligations, U.S. So they were looking at whether a significant swath of land covering the eastern half of the state of Oklahoma is part of what federal law anachronistically refers to as Indian country, that is, where Native American reservations, where tribal government retained considerable sovereign authority. So it's also got me really thinking about, like, when you're talking about these reservations and where these, it's essentially like sovereign nations within the United States. They have their own laws, they have their own, you know, regulations and things like that, and absolutely deserving it. And they were looking at, did lands of the, specifically the Muscogee Creek Nation, remain a reservation after Oklahoma became a state through this case of McGriff versus Oklahoma. So you probably already know, we'll just do a spoiler alert now, the court did rule in a 5-4 decision that Oklahoma must honor the treaty from nearly two centuries ago, setting aside this land for Native peoples. And who was on the right side of history? Neil Gorsuch, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor. And Stephen Breyer supported the ruling. And then fuck the other four people who went against it. Uncle Tom Clarence or whatever his name is.
And so, of course, what's his face?
Oh, Kavanaugh, ways of space. And that's the thing. Gorsuch pointing. Think about this. Agent Orange appointed Neil Gorsuch. So this is interesting.
I was surprised. I was very pleasantly surprised.
What's interesting is, and we'll look into this, a lot of First Nations people were not necessarily surprised because Gorsuch is a strong sort of, let's look at what the law says. And all First Nations people were, all Native people were saying was like, look at what the law was and what did the treaty say? And we'll look into that into a second. And the land that we're talking about, it's 19 million acres and it's about 47% of the state of Oklahoma, about 1.8 million residents, though majority of those residents are actually non-Native. They're, you know, a lot of white people in this land. And so, and that actually happens in a lot of these lands that are reservations. You find that, like, there's just white people just, like, you know, living on the, it's like there's Americans living in Canada. Like, it happens, right?
And then, like, they're just like, why? I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm here. Hey, how's it going? Let me get a, you know, poutine.
Yeah.
I think that's the French fries with, like,
gravy, right?
Gravy and cheese. I don't know.
Yeah. I've never had it.
I have. When I used to work on the cruise ship, my Canadian friends would make it for me. And by that, I mean, we're in the dining hall and they just get some fries and some gravy and some cheese. And like, hey, you go.
That's your Canadian accent.
Hey, you go. About fries. Okay. So since about 1890, it's been a majority white, which Kavanaugh was like constantly pointing out. So a lot of the arguments against, you know, this case was that, like, well, you know, all these white people have been there since 1890. So, well, it's clearly not been.
You really want to die on that?
That's the hill you want to die at. I know. Like, well, actually, First Nations people have been here since we don't even know. So what about that? And it's sort of this idea that just because white people showed up on this land and they're the original gentrifiers of, like, ooh, here's land and trying to take it over. And there's this constant conversation, like, how can Indian people have jurisdiction over the white man? Because there's all these white people living there. They, you know, they're going to have to live and abide by these, you know, Native rules. Put a pin in that. We'll get to that. So also want to point out that this land includes much of Tulsa. Also, it's five different tribes that make up this area. So yes, this was specifically going to be focusing on the Muscogee Creek Nation, but it was also going to be impacting the Cherokee Nation, Choctaw Nation, Chickasaw Nation, and the Seminole Nation as well. And the case itself, so Jim McGritt. So this guy, Mr. McGritt, he was a member of the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, and he was convicted of rape in the state court. So McGritt's crime took place within that land, and it was being argued that that land was part of the Creek Reservation. So if you're thinking about, like, oh, this was, like, you know, the need, this was a... The reason why this case was being brought forth was because someone was being tried in Oklahoma for a crime that they essentially were saying Oklahoma did not have the right to try him, and they had given him the death penalty.
Okay, so is he a Native?
Yes, he's First Nations. He is, okay. Yeah. And he's not just, like, you know, 1%. Like, he is, like, he is.
Okay.
And originally, the Supreme Court was actually going to be hearing a case called Sharp v. Murphy, and it was going to be, in that case, it was very similar. The prosecution in the state court of Patrick, it was the prosecution in state court of Patrick Murphy, who was a Creek Indian for murdering George Jacobs in the rural McIntosh County east of Oklahoma. So that was going to be the original case. He had been sentenced to death, but he had been sentenced to death, but the murder happened on quote unquote Indian land. So it was similar. He argued that they didn't have jurisdiction and the state could not impose the death penalty, which, like, why is that even a thing? So that was the original case that they were going to see. But Gorsuch had to recuse himself because he had already been on that in the lower courts. And so then it was met with they were just at a tie. And so then when essentially the Supreme Court was like, well, let's find a case that's very similar, because apparently this is, like, really popular. They had many to choose from. So that's where they went with other one, where, again, there's these people who are being tried in the state of Oklahoma. But the question is, do they have jurisdiction over it? That really should either be tried within the rules of the tribal community or at the federal level. Just a sidebar, when this case was being brought up in the McGriff v. Oklahoma, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was actually the wild card. Everybody was actually pretty sure that Gorsuch was going to be 4-4, because he already had a precedence of actually voting with tribal folks, because he really looks at the treaties and the laws and just interprets them as, well, this is what it said. We have to uphold that. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, love her, sending you prayers, but she has not always sided on the side of First Nations people. So no one's perfect. So because of the Major Crimes Act, it provides that Indian, when I say this is what the law says, so any Indian who commits certain offenses against the person or property of another Indian or any other person is subject to the exclusive jurisdiction of the United States if that crime was committed within the Indian country. So again, Oklahoma has no authority over this cases and probably over several other quick cases as well. Because it's a sovereign nation. That's like us going into Canada and being like, you can't have those fries or something, you know?
Or you stole my fries, therefore you're going to get the death penalty.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. So the question is, which court did it happen on a reservation? So Oklahoma was essentially trying to argue that there was no reservation and there hadn't been one for a long time, which is weird. They're like, what? There was no reservation.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, since 1890, all these white people were living there. So what kind of reservation could there be? Classic. And then there's this lawyer that is their go-to lawyer for arguing against First Nations people. It's like their go-to lawyer. She's a monster. And I don't know her name, and who cares? So
it's like that one lawyer from the Wire, that one lawyer who's like always speaking up on behalf of like some shady stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's always that like go-to shade town lawyer. I was just watching something else recently and there was a go-to sort of shady lawyer. There's always a shady go-to lawyer. So call them 1-800-SHADY-LAWYER. So Oklahoma was arguing, they had fears. They were like, oh my gosh, but you know, if the Supreme Court rules in favor that, you know, all of this territory is actually, you know, First Nations, there'll be terrible consequences. Like, look at all these murderers and rapists and other criminals. They'd be let loose and the state wouldn't be able to, you know, convict or have any authority over them. And then the taxes, let's just talk about the taxes. All these taxes would just go unpaid. And the state, like, generally lacks authority to tax, you know, Indians in Indian country. And so turning half the state into Indian country would decimate the state and local budgets. First of all, that's also bullshit on many levels, because state of Oklahoma is broke and that has nothing to do with Native Americans. It's bad policies. They don't like to do taxes. Oklahoma hasn't raised its taxes since the 90s. So that's on y'all. Don't try to come for like these First Nations people. And like, again, through this whole entire thing, haven't these people been through enough?
Yeah. Like, there's just like finding reasons at this point that doesn't even make sense.
No, not at all. And so then also all adoptions and custody disputes involving Indian children residing on domicile land within 1866 boundaries would fall within the exclusive jurisdiction of tribal courts or even over both parents' objections. So there's a lot of court cases that involve custody over adopting Native children, who also points out that adopting Native children was historically a way for white folks to get some of their lands, because we'll go into this in a moment. But a lot of land, like land was instead started to be allotted to different Native people. They would be guaranteed a certain section of land. And so white mm-hmm. folks would adopt these children to try to seize their land. And also seizing children was part of a practice of assimilation because they just thought that these Native people were just so terrible. And they would send these children to boarding schools, prohibit them from speaking their own language. Just really terrible, fucked up shit. And so they tried to argue that this would, you know, again, like it would just really fuck up the state of Oklahoma. Like that's what they would argue. And even some of the Supreme Court justices would be like, well, now all these people would have to abide by these First Nation laws and rules, and it would be so difficult and hard for them. So the Muscogee Creek Nation, which is the tribe that was involved in this case, they're a sovereign nation. They elect their own government. They operate in their own court system. They have a police force, 3 hospitals. They command a budget of more than $350 million. They employ over 2,000 people. It's one of 5 reservations in the area that we talked about. So it's not like it's just this. It is a well-run community of people and actually has like mm-hmm. more money probably than the rest of the state of Oklahoma. Yeah. So this, the Muscogee Creek Nation is tied into the Trail of Tears. Mm-hmm. So that's how far back this is all going into. So they weren't even originally over in that area. So back in 1838, the U.S. government, through the Indian Removal Act, forced thousands of Native Americans out of their homes and ordered them to march more than 1,000 miles to relocate to Oklahoma. It was one of the harshest winters, and they were in areas like all of these different nations were in areas like Georgia and Alabama. So in these eastern parts of the country, which you don't mm-hmm. really associate with, you know, Native folks, right? Because right. they were forced to move. And this is all thanks to Andrew Jackson. Is he on one of our bills? Get him the fuck yep. out of there. Is he on the 20? Is that why we're trying to get him off the 20 and get Harriet Tubman on there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck this guy. Because he was a populist president. He was determined. Part of his campaign speech was like, I'm going to move these people east of the Mississippi. That was like his claim to fame. And
get out of here.
Big snaps to white liberal women, because you helped to fight this in Congress. At first, the House had not passed the Indian Removal Act, but then, you know, backstage fuckery, but like back channel fuckery that happens House of Cards style. Not that this has anything to do with Kevin Spacey, but like fuck him too, as we're dishing out fucks. Never forget, mm-hmm. fuck you, Kevin Spacey. So, but anyways, the white women were leading the charge to fight this. They almost succeeded, but it still ended up passing. And so good job, Karens. That was a good Karen thing. Well, not that all white ladies are Karens, but... They could have been. I'm sure there was a Karen in the bunch who, you know, used her Care Bear stare for good. So there was over about 20,000 that did this march, and about 4,000 died. And it was estimated that 1 in 6 didn't survive. So this itself was a genocide, right? Yeah. Like America mm-hmm. is just the history of genocides. And this is one that we just don't reflect onto the details enough. Like, Trail of Tears get thrown around, and I don't think people understand really what that was. And so with the Creek Nation in 1832, it was then declared that all their land east of the Mississippi, in return, there was a promise that the Creek country west of the Mississippi shall be solemnly granted to the Creek Indians. And a subsequent treaty was then established in 1833, establishing the borders of the Creek country, which it described as a permanent home to the whole Creek nation. So the borders of the Creek country were later reduced by an 1866 treaty. All these treaties kept happening of like restructuring. Right. Like,
yeah.
It's like, damn, you walked me all over here. You said that this was mine. Then you're like, oh, no, I meant that over there. And then this, right?
It's like they keep amending it and they keep like changing it. And restructuring and reforming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so Congress made several attempts to be assholes about this. Like in 1893, the federal government started pressuring tribes to divide their land up into small privately owned own portions. And that's when we get to allotment. So I had mentioned mm-hmm. earlier allotment, since that's why people would try to adopt these native children, because they were allotted land. So Creek people eventually agreed to be to allot the land into 160-acre parcels to individual tribe members who could not sell, transfer, otherwise encumber their allotments for a number of years. This is actually an example. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but the richest little black girl oil tycoon, she had been allotted a certain, she had been given 160 acres of land, which turned out to be rich in oil. Mm-hmm. And, but she also too, not only was she allotted this land, but she also was from slavery ancestry by the Creek Nation. So what I do like that the podcast points out, that the Creek Nation also guilty of participating in slavery. I mean, this is like you being just a Nick Cannon and punching down, right? Like you're just, this is yeah. you having a Nick Cannon moment. So, but they eventually, they learned slavery from white folks. So they were like, well, we're going to do it too. But they had then freed some of, they had freed these people. And that's why a lot of them have the last name Free. Her name was Sarah Freedman. And that mm-hmm. came from, because she was a part of the Freedmen. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so you can look into that episode if you're interested about hearing about that. Although, like, some people tried to, like, come at me for that episode because they're like, well, I feel like you're celebrating, you know, the oil industry. Fuck you. I'm celebrating a black woman who, back in, like, the 1930s, before we knew there was an environmental issue,
yeah,
and
she
had come into money and ended up getting taken away from her anyways.
Excuse me, but are we going after all the other oil tycoons?
Yeah,
can a black woman make some money? Tycoons, come on.
And it was back in the day. Like, can a black woman make some money, you know, back in the day? Come on. Anyways, so there was a lot of ways that also that folks would also end up losing their money through sometimes unpaid property tax, and then they were forced off their land. Also similar to what happened to the Mexican Americans in Texas when they couldn't afford after their we talked about this with the Texas Rangers, but they couldn't afford their property taxes anymore because they didn't know they had property taxes, because Mexico then became Texas, and then mm-hmm. they had to pay all these taxes, and then they got kicked off their land and murdered by the Texas Rangers. So just, you know, America's greatest worst hits. Sidebar that I just want to point out is that there's a story of John Ridge and Major Ridge. So they had actually helped to, they were considered influential leaders in the Cherokee Nation. And one of the women who, she does the This Land podcast, she's descendant of them. And essentially, they ended up getting murdered because they had signed the Treaty of New Ecata. And it's very controversial. And it's essentially what helped to start the Trail of Tears, essentially. It was a thing that had signed over that there was going to be a move to the west to Indian territory, and it initiated the Trail of Tears. And essentially, there was a rule that had been established amongst these five tribes that, like, anybody who had sold their land would be murdered. And because they had done this and people had blamed them for it, they actually ended up being murdered by their fellow tribespeople. So, very sad.
Yeah.
Okay. Rounding out the Supreme Court ruling. So that's the basis of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. But there was, so that's what the basis of all this was. But there's all these treaties that essentially say that this will be your land. There's a quote that essentially, for like, as long as the rivers run and the grass grows, this will be your land. That's what it says. And last time mm-hmm. I checked, the rivers are still running over there. The grass is still growing.
The grass is still growing. Yep.
And so in the case of Lone Wolf v. Hitchcock in 1903, the Supreme Court held that Congress wields significant constitutional authority when it comes to tribal relations, possessing even the authority to breach its own promises and treaties. So they're like, hey, Congress can, like, which is a shitty rule that they had decided, but they're like, act of Congress could deem and say that you can break a promise. But here's the thing. Congress never did that, right? So, mm-hmm. yes, they created allotment, but that doesn't mean that the has broken the treaty. It just has divvied up the land amongst First Nations people in a different way. So the Creek lands remain a reservation, including the place where McGriff committed the crime. See where we went? We just went on that journey, and we came all the way pulled back there. Back to McGriff. Remember him? He was being tried and sentenced to death.
Yeah.
So McGriff was to be tried. So he needs essentially, what they're saying is he needs to be tried in federal courts. And most importantly, what that's saying is that he needs to be tried in federal court because this is First Nations land. That's mm-hmm. what that's saying. So in what Gorsuch wrote, he said in his opinion, he wrote, "On the far end of the Trail of Tears was a promise. Forced to leave their ancestral lands in Georgia and Alabama, the Creek nations received assurance that their new lands in the West would be secure forever. Today, we are asked whether the land these treaties promise remains an Indian reservation for purposes of federal criminal law. Because Congress has not said otherwise, we hold the government to its word." So really, the only thing that could happen is Congress could come in and be like, that doesn't exist anymore. But they never have, and I doubt that they will. So what does this mean? Nothing. Honestly, nothing for non-natives. That, listen, they've been living on reservation land, using the hospitals, the police, and nothing is going to change. Not an inch of land has changed hands. All this is talking about who has jurisdiction. And this is about jurisdiction, not necessarily land. It's not like all these white people have to like move. Nothing. It's just now just reinforcing what these First Nations people always knew. And there's a whole other conversation, but also too, I would point out that Native Americans have a higher incarceration rate. They are disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. So something to also look at, that they're like, oh, but now there's all these cases that we have to look at. But there's, again, The Wire teaches us the how and the why these things are happening.
Yeah.
Also to point out, there are 200 million acres for state parks and just 50 million for reservations. So we're saying let's protect trees, but not First Nation
not the people.
Also, here's the thing. So I want to point out, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, but now all these, you know, white people have to, you know, abide by tribal laws. Not at all. So the constraints
that
of trial...
That was going to be my question.
So there are constraints of tribal jurisdiction over non-Indians on non-Indian land. Those rules don't, like, there's tribal rules don't apply to non-people of that tribe.
Okay.
They're hanging out there, but they don't necessarily are abiding by, you know, those rules. Here's the thing where that is really unfortunate. Because everyone's trying to like, oh, what about the white people? What about the white people? No, we need to be looking about how that rule actually fucks over First Nations people even more. This is why there is a higher rate of rapes that happen to Native women, because nothing can happen to these assholes. It is free territory for them to do whatever the fuck that they want, because it's like international waters for them.
Right.
8 out of 10 Native women have been stalked or abused or raped, and about 90% of the perpetrators are non-Native. So, yeah.
So those people, the monsters, they can't be tried under the Indian law. The Native law, right?
Mm-hmm.
The First Nations law, but can the rest of the...
It should be like in federal. Wouldn't you think that it would be happening into federal court?
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
So I mean, you can't just have like these rogue monsters just going around. There's no accountability. There's nothing.
Apparently, like, it's just been free reign for them to do whatever it is they want or something.
I mean, come on. There's gotta be something. Like, if it's not that, it has to be like the federal law. Like,
because it is, it really does suck that First Nations people not only have to abide by federal law, but also their tribal law, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you're right. That's interesting. But apparently just like not enough action has been taken. Because then you're like the FBI, and the FBI doesn't care about shit sometimes, especially when it comes to First Nations people. Oh, you think the FBI don't. And Bill Barr gotta care? Yeah. Also, too, to point out that a lot of this is also a lot of like why these arguments are trying to be made is there's also other connections to other court cases. There's literally a guy who is arguing against against McGritt and trying to say that this is Oklahoma territory. He's also involved in a case of land dispute in Massachusetts about a casino, a reservation casino. And so there's a lot of just like people who are wanting to make money. A lot of this land is also still on oil land that's untapped, mineral land that's untapped. And so what they want to do is try to dig in there and try to be like, oh, this isn't your land. This is up for grabs. So the court decisions means that indigenous people who commit crimes on the Eastern Oklahoma Reservation, which includes much of Tulsa, cannot be prosecuted by state or local law enforcement and must instead face justice in tribal or federal courts. And though this decision specifically is geared towards the Creek Nations Reservation, it's essentially assumed that it's going to apply to all the other four tribes, the Seminole, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Cherokee. And there was a joint statement that was put out amongst the tribes saying that, listen, like, you know, we are committed to implementing a framework of shared jurisdiction that will persevere sovereign interests and rights to self-government while affirming jurisdictional understandings, procedures, laws, and regulations and support public safety, our economy, and private property rights. So they're not just like, fuck you, Oklahoma. We can do whatever the fuck we want. Like, they're like, oh, we're here to, like, we're going to create rules and we're going to work with you. So we're going to figure out taxing and zoning and government functions and all that sort of stuff. But also note that there's other underlying theme when you hear these stories that have to deal with, the climate crisis, because they're also being pushed into some of the worst areas. They're building all these chicken farms that are highly toxic and polluting their creeks where they do different ceremonies and have different services and things like that. And they're being pushed out of their land in a different other way. So I think to quote Madonna Thunderhawk, who has the best name ever, and she is with the Lakota People's Law Project. She said, and she's in North Dakota, she says, it's a war for us. There are some victories, but the war continues. So this was a definite, like, a pin in the cap of, like, yay, a win, but there's still more. And I wanted to point this out because I don't think it was getting enough attention in the history behind it. And, you know, with the renaming of the Washington Foreskins,
I was like, wait, what?
With the renaming of them, like, there, you know, here there are these victories, and, you know, we have Native lives matter, right? As well. And again, we always look at, like, who's getting fucked over at the very bottom, and how do we make sure that their rights are protected? Because when their rights are protected, then everyone is protected.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. It was very educational. I did not know anything. I was
like, you just kind of like heard about the case and you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, but good.
Like, oh, yeah, good. But like, no background. Like, I didn't know any of this or like why it even started.
Well, and all of the First Nations people had been asking the government to do was just to adhere to the promise and written agreement that was made. And again, it's not like they're looking for all they're looking for is upholding the treaties and the promises. Yeah. And I mean, they're not looking, everyone's like afraid of like, oh, they're going to try to get, they're not looking for revenge. The same thing like all black people are looking for is equality. We're not looking for revenge. We're just looking for like what's ours and what, you know, has been taken away from us. And can we just live in peace? And I think there's this white fear that like, oh, they're going to, they would then enact revenge, which that's your mindset. That's how y'all are thinking. That's not how these groups of people are looking to think. And I would understand why they would enact revenge, but that's not what they want. So hats off. I think keep an eye on these conversations because I don't think that we talk about, Native rights and Native journeys. And you know what? This made me think. In history class in school, when you get to high school, there should be a year of Native American history, a full year of it. Understanding
none of that.
But there should, here's what I think that there should be. There should be a year of it where you're learning for a full year. And you're understanding like all the different tribes and the cultures and the court cases and who's still here and all of like their just a full year of that. And then a full year of Black history, a full year of it, because those are two groups and communities that are the backbone of American history.
Exactly.
And we need to understand these lands. And I think that's exactly what needs to happen.
Yep. Agreed.
Well, thanks for listening and congratulations on the historic win, but the fight is not over. Fact check, fact check, fact check. So get the facts, ma'am. Okay, don't have much for you this week. I was going to go into further detail of I pulled up Maury's text message thread to me about the Say My Name music video, but it's very detailed. So that might have to wait for another day, but it is so interesting, the drama behind Say My Name. We only scratch the tip of the iceberg. I think we had said that Nick Cannon was completely fired from all of his jobs. That was incorrect. Did not mean to say that. He did lose his jobs with Viacom, but he did not lose his jobs with Fox. So Fox had issued out a statement pretty much saying that, hey, we believe that Nick is learning. He is learning from his mistakes and willing to work on this, and he's going to keep his job hosting The Masked Singer. Andrew Jackson is on the 20, but let's get him off. Another reason to vote for Joe Biden so we can finish what we had started a few years ago, putting Harriet Tubman on the fucking 20. If you've seen the movie Harriet or you listen to our detailed corner on Harriet Tubman, you know why this woman deserves the spot on the 20, which is also like my favorite bill. It's not too much. It's not too little. It's just right. Get Andrew Jackson the fuck off that bill. And we had called Sarah, richest little oil tycoon Black girl. I think I named her Sarah Friedman. She was of the Friedmen who were enslaved by the Muskegee, but her last name was actually Sarah Rector. And you can find out more information about her in episode 233. It's so fascinating because we're coming full circle. I remember reading that point that like, wait, what? Black people are also enslaved by indigenous people? What? And then here it is. We find out that little subplot of history and that all come in full circle, connecting the dots here. The history dots at Minority Corner. It's like a conspiracy theory board, but not a conspiracy theory. It's just history. Some people need to calm it down with their conspiracy theories. And lastly, you can check out to see what land you are living on. I know you're like, but I'm living in America. No. Which First Nations tribe land, that's a weird sentence to say, but you can find out who originally was on that land before shenanigans in history happened, before genocide happened, or before folks were pushed off that land. Who was there first? It's good to know our history. So you can go to native-land.ca. All right, and as we close out the show, if you've gone the extra mile to become a Maximum Fund member, I just want to say thank you so much. You have no idea. It means the world because, again, we're able to do this show because you make it possible. We're able to keep creating independent content outside of, you know, there's no media execs here. It's just us, the ragtag people at Minority Corner and Maximum Fun, doing what we do because you like it. You like what we do. You like us and we like you, and we're going to keep it that way because you support us. So we can't thank you enough. If you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, you can do so. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. And that's gonna do it. Love y'all so much. Thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.